Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
Here we go.
Woohoo! We're really excited today about our special guest, our beautiful client, Lisa Lucas, all the way from Brisbane. You're in Brisbane in Queensland, aren't you, Lisa?
Yes.
Welcome
yes,
to Dorothy and the Dealer.
Welcome to Dorothy and the Dealer,
hi,
Lisa.
Guys. Hi. Thank you. Thanks so much for having me on.
Do you know, it feels like we should have had you on ages ago because it's just especially because your kids are great big fans of us and our and the intro
to Dorothy and the Dealer,
is that what you're trying to song get, thing to Dorothy and the Dealer. We've seen them doing it. It's pretty cute.
I think they must hear it in their sleep.
Really?
Because because Mick and I, if we're in the car together, we listen to the Dorothy and the Dealer together. And when we travelled, that's all they heard.
That's very cute. Yeah. Well, you know how it starts because you listen, obviously. So you want to share a song before we get started?
Yeah.
What's a song that you...
So my song at the moment that I play like every day to get me pumped up is Raise Your Glass by Pink.
Pink. Oh.
Yeah.
You got Millie there. Millie's a big Pink fan.
You are wrong. All the right ways, all my I don't remember the words right now because I'm under pressure.
I'm pretty sure I feel it. I'm like that crazy person when you stop at the lights, you know,
singing
dancing
it.
To it.
So sing some for us. Go on,
come
Lisa.
Come on, mate,
Lisa.
Get it out.
God, the pressure's
her out.
On,
get
guys.
In. Help
I'm
her
a
out.
Singer.
Help her out.
I can't even think of the words. I'll do the three. Raise your glass.
I'll tell you a story about that song. I have a song with my niece and my nephew. My niece's song is I Wish I Was a Punk Rocker by Sandy Tom. And Lola has kind of
was a punk rocker.
Lola's kind of stolen that song. But my nephew, my song with him is the Pink one, Raise Your Glass, because when he was younger, I used to pick him up from school in my red convertible and he would always want me to play that song really, really, really loud to embarrass his sister when we were picking her up in the convertible. So that's the song we would play.
Bam, bam, bam. Is that it?
So raise your glass if you.
It's good song. I like Pink. You know, when we were in California, we were on the boardwalk in California, and we went past the trapeze place where she started to learn trapeze. And what happened was, she was walking on the boardwalk, and she thought, "Wouldn't it be really cool to be able to do this in a concert?" And she went in and spoke to the guy, who was doing all the teaching of trapeze, and he was like, "Yeah, cool, you should come do it." So she literally started training there with those guys on the board.
Have you seen the Funhouse DVD?
Have you seen her live? No.
Right, because when she plays live, she's literally on a trapeze the whole time, swinging.
Well, she's
out over
doing
audience.
All sorts of random
and
stuff.
Singing at the same time. Like, it's just, what a feat. That's insane.
Really, yeah, it'd be awesome.
Okay, so let's have a chat.
Who are you, Lisa Lucas?
Can I just say, you were saying that Mick wanted you to mention a song or something?
Oh, yeah. He wanted me to say that my song was Hits from the Bong from Cypress Hill, just so that he could have Mitch singing it.
Hits from the Bong. I can tell you, when that song came out, I was definitely not of sane mind, and I would have had many hits from the bong.
I'm pretty sure that's why, you know, you kindred spirits, you're him. We've got this funny little video of Zach when it was on the radio, and Zach's, you know, singing and doing these, you know, fingers up in the back of the car. Very cute.
It's very cute.
That's what you teach your four-year-old, isn't it?
It's exactly
that's what you teach your four-year-old. So this is a bong, son, right?
No, Mitch, disclaimer. No,
maybe not.
Okay, so how about we get started and you just share part of your story with us, Lisa, especially about what life was like leading up to meeting us and before you did any work, you know, with us about, you know, transformation stuff. You know,
what was it? Yeah, it was quite like? was quite a whirlwind when I met you guys. I'll never forget seeing you for the first time. But
how long ago was it?
I think, well, I've been in Brisbane just over 5 years, and I met you probably 6 months after I moved. So, right. Yeah, yeah. But
Jesus, is it that long? Is it that long?
Yeah.
It feels, I know.
Well, crazy. Zach is 4 in a couple of months, and wow. we weren't even pregnant with him when we met you guys. So,
wow.
Yeah. So I was at a Juice Plus conference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I had, in my infinite wisdom, meeting you guys, I just tried to make money anyway and in every way I possibly could, because I'm a nurse, I always thought that I'd have all this money. I've had financial freedom because you're never out of the job. And there's always a paycheck coming. And when you don't have to worry about a paycheck coming, you get into this mentality, or I did, that it was free flowing. So I didn't have to worry about it, didn't have to hold on to it. So I was very, very good at spending money. And Mick was very, very much the same. So we were a bad couple. And he was the same. He'd always worked. He's worked since he was 14 years old. Mm-hmm. So we had plenty of money coming in, but every tax year we'd look at our income and think, where the hell did all that money go? Because not only have we got none of it, but we seemed to accumulate all this debt, and we had multiple credit cards each and, personal loans coming out of our ears. And so we thought, well, we're just going to make more money. So it didn't ever occur to us we had to get better with the money coming in. We just had to make more of it. I had the Juice Plus business, and I went to the conference, and that's where I met you guys. And I remember seeing you on stage, and I remember you, Mitch, saying that, if you could fuck up your life this much, imagine if you put all that energy into creating something great, what you could achieve. And I thought, wow. Imagine if I could take all that energy I put into spending my money.
Yeah.
Actually, focus it somewhere else. And I thought that was fantastic. Mm. So I hogtied Mick to mastermind and money. Told him I can't go alone. I don't want to sit on my own. And, that old chestnut. And he thought he was going to be the supportive husband for half a day and then run away. Yeah, the rest is history. He couldn't get out of the seat. And funny, I've got to tell this story last mastermind of money, because we go every time you're here.
I love that.
Last mastermind he was there, and he'd won tickets to the football for the whole weekend. And he couldn't get himself to leave mastermind of money to go to the football. every time he'd say, I'd say, what time are you going? He's like, I got lunch, and lunch would be gone. I'm like, when's she gonna go? I really want to watch this game. I'll go the next month. And it was the whole weekend.
Oh, it's so cute.
Oh, that's pretty cool, isn't it?
He had good seats as well, right?
I remember you guys in that room, and I remember, every couple that turns up in the room, they have you visually see different things. You see the husband comes in who's awkward, and then within about 10 minutes he's kind of like, hold on a minute, and then within half an hour he's like, Jesus. And he's either going to run out the door, or he's strapped himself into the chair and he's put his helmet on and go, right, this is making some sense. And, some of them, it makes so much sense that it's just too scary for them. So they just don't make it, and then what they'll do is they'll drag the wife out of the room with them and they'll do a runner and you never see them again. But then, our process is to filter that out. We want, at the beginning, we want to say, this is what we're going to talk about. And if you want it, if you want to talk about, the delusion around money, and you think you come here for some quick fix or quick trick, you're in the wrong motherfucking room. Get out. But if you're in here because you actually get that you're able to put the time and effort in, but the problem is you're doing, you're doing the right thing, but in the wrong place. Do you know what I mean? You're spinning your wheels in the mud and you're not getting any traction. And so it's a lot of the time, the ones that stick around are the ones that, we very much target what we're saying to them, and we're playing to what we want them to hear and what we want them to know. And so I remember Mick in the room, and I remember by the time we got to the end of probably the first day, he was like one of those husbands who was just like, shit. Talk about calling it as it is. And he was really in, and it's funny, whenever I see Mick, he's such a lovely fella. You know, he just gets me and I get him, and you know, it's really good. It's really cute.
I have a real soft spot for Mick.
Yeah.
Everybody does.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing pre-meeting you guys was Mick and I have been together. I was 18 years old when I met him. So right. We've been together for 20 years. Mm. And we've been married just 14 years. We celebrated 14 years last weekend.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
And thank you. We have had such one of those relationships that you think, what are they doing? Like we used to say we're very passionate. Really, we were just crazy. We just loved, like, screamed at each other. I left him twice, once before we got married, once after. We just couldn't seem to be in the right place at the right time together.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I think we were very lucky in that we just never gave up. One of us always wouldn't give the other one up, even though, you know, we weren't always happy. But definitely since doing all this work, and I think that's one of the best things, I'll be ever grateful that I managed to hog time to that room, because going through the process with him, I never would have been able to explain it to him had I not done it with him.
Yeah.
And so he's just like you say, Mitch, he was just 100% in. Yeah. I signed up for everything and he signed up for everything.
Yeah.
All the other seminars separately. We didn't even know we'd done it, you know, because we were separated at lunchtime. And when we came back to each other, we had that, she's going to be mad. And she thought, oh, I hope she gives me the money. Yeah. And we both were like, why wouldn't we do this? Mm-hmm. So I think that's been another great thing that we've been able to do it together.
Yeah, but you know what? I think that's what kind of makes a marriage, you know. Marriages, people are delusional about marriages. They think they're meant to be, you know, cupcakes, rainbows and unicorns. And they're fucking not. You know, marriage is tough, man. It's one of the toughest institutions. It's the hardest thing I've ever had to do. And I've done, like, you know my history. I've been in prison and everything. It's the hardest thing I've ever had to do is keep a marriage together. It's not easy. But that's part of the thing. You know, it's ebbs and flows. It's peaks and troughs. It's pleasure and pain. That's life. Do you know what I mean? And it's about you find yourself in being able to manage that, and you find your love in being able to manage the ebbs and the flows and the peaks and the troughs. And you need them to keep you accountable and keep you together. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
So I think our ebbs and flows aren't quite as bad as they used to be as well.
Of course,
we understand ourselves better and each other better.
Well, that's the key, right? As you evolve, you realize it's actually not about the other person. They're just mirroring something for you that you haven't seen and you haven't learned. So you recognize that it's when you take responsibility for that aspect of them in yourself, then, you know, things start to shift, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of people prior to this work would want to blame the other person. After doing the work, they realize there's no point in any of that. You're best to look inside of yourself rather than trying to sort it out outside, because transformation doesn't happen out there. It happens in here, you know. So then where to from there, Lise, once you did Mastermind of Money, because that was in Brisbane, but then you didn't come, you didn't do relationships and you in Brisbane.
It was like another year later.
Yeah. And so did you implement all the money stuff up until that point?
Kinda. We're so arrogant. We were so arrogant. When I look back now, I think, oh, my God. We came to the seminar because we couldn't get our shit together, and we left and we were, yes, we're going to do this. And then within a week we were like, oh, we'll kind of half do it. And we had a chat to you guys after Mastermind Money. I'll never forget it. And we had already bought a caravan, like this massive brand-new caravan to travel Australia. And we figured we would sort all our money out and be able to go. And when we told you, Mitch, we said, oh, you know, our money situation's going to change because Mick was going to stop working and we were going to live off my nursing, but, you know, maternity leave, which is like next to nothing. And you said, I know you're not going to want to hear this, but you haven't earned the right to do that yet. And we're like, oh, yep. And we walked out and looked at each other and we're like, we're still going, right? Yeah, of course we're going. So off we went, with the intention of meeting you guys in Perth to go to RMY. So we got there. It was not quite a year later. It was just under a year later.
Yeah.
And did RMY. But by the time we had got there, we had no money, like none.
I remember. And
we were struggling a lot. And we we didn't really know where to go from there. We'd camped in Perth for like, I don't know, 6 or 8 weeks or something so that I could work, so that we could get a bit of income. But, yeah, we had like $50 or $100 in the bank and we were lost. We were completely lost. And we stood in front of you guys and cried. I cried. Michael just stood there, shocked state that he is, and said, we've got nothing. Like, what do we do? And you said, it's all right. We've got this, but you've got to do this, this, this. We did it. But I think the best thing is that when we made the decision to, no, like, this is ridiculous. We found these people for a reason. You guys turned up in our life for a reason. We got to listen to what they say. We're not getting anywhere on our own decision making. Clearly, we need to actually implement this. So we implemented it, but we went home. We got all our books out. We did all the work, and 2 days later, Mick hadn't even started looking for work yet. All we had done was put all the wealth principles in place. We got some money to get home. And I had contacted my boss and said, when can I come back to work? Like, I need to come back now. And 2 days later, he had two companies contact him wanting him to come home and work. And they started this bidding war over who would get him and what job was better and how much they could offer him. And he said, I can't believe this has happened, when he hadn't even asked for anything yet. It just sort of appeared. And it was because we had made the decision, like, this is what's going to happen. This is, you know, we put it out to the universe and it provided. And
I think that's a really important point, because I know, like, I suppose, you know, you've just said you came and did the seminar but you didn't really implement the work. That's the first thing, the mastermind of money. Now, the reason that happens is because people think that money is just about the money side of it. So they don't realize that it actually, the mind part of the seminar is actually really super important, the mindset part, right? So what will happen is that we will, people, and this is from our personal experience from before we started doing any of the work on ourselves as well, we sabotage things because we subconsciously make these choices to, you know, to not go ahead to do what we know we need to do. So we hand people the principles, but the people who make it work for them are the people that actually implement them. But not just that, they have to sort the mind stuff out, because if you don't sort the mind stuff out, the rest of it doesn't work, because you will subconsciously sabotage it. As soon as you did relationships in you and you shifted the mindset stuff and then made the call to do it, that's when everything fell into place. And people will think that that's a coincidence, but it's not a coincidence. It's a matter of you resonating energetically with the result that you're looking for and with the outcome that you want. Before that and prior to that point, you weren't doing that. And it's like the best way I have to describe it is that if you're sitting in a room, like right now we're sitting in a room, and technically there's radio stations playing in this room right now, but we can't hear them because we don't have anything that's tuned in to that frequency. As soon as we tune in to that frequency, then we can access the music, the sound that's coming that way. It's exactly the same thing with the money. It's exactly the same thing with our mindset, right? As soon as you guys tuned in to the frequency that it's all around you, this is it, we're going to do this, we're going to step up, we've got this, then it all happens. And it happens in a way that seems like a miracle, but it's actually not a miracle, because if you know how science works, there's a reason why the radio station is playing in here right now. But people don't get that. They call it a miracle because they don't understand that that's actually how nature works. There's a system that makes that happen, and that's what we're teaching in the Mastermind of Money Principles. We're not teaching about money. We're teaching about the system that makes it all actually run, you know, the laws that make it work. So I love hearing stories, and I love that people get to hear stories like that, Lisa, because people hear us telling these stories all of the time. Oh, and there was this person that did this and this person that did this, but it's important that they hear it from the person that it's actually happened to, so that they can get that it's not something that we just made up. It's something that actually happens to people when they put their commitment in.
I think as well, though, that what happens for people is they get to a point where they have no other option. Like, you know, the amount of people that I sit with, and guys, and I say, just do what I'm telling you to do and everything will fall into place. So people think that that's, if somebody was saying that to me, I'd think, what the fuck would I do what you're telling me to do? Well, because what you're telling yourself to do is not fucking working. Right?
Yeah.
Because it has you in a situation where, and this is the conversation I was able to have with the guys, has you in a situation where you got $50 and you're over the other side of the country and you need to get fucking home and you're living in a fucking tent. What the fuck? So what happens is that pain gets so much that people have no other option but to do something. But there's something that we're telling them, like, you know, I say this all the time to people. Your history is littered with concepts of impossible. It's impossible. But it's not. And the difference between impossible and possible is not a miracle. It's a fucking system. It's a system. And if you follow the system, and the system, nature has a system, you know, and attached to that system is a language. You know, there's a language to that system. And it takes time before people hear the language of what you're saying to them tune into it, and then they're able to go from, you know, impossible to possible, you know, and like I said, it's not a miracle, it's a fucking system, and if you follow the system, you can't get it wrong, because nature has a system upon which it bases everything, including how we exchange energy, and money is just energy. 100%. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So can I just say something about that? Because when you say, I've heard you say, just do what I tell you to do. We're not doing it to say I'm the boss and I'm dictating.
That's right, yeah.
It's about saying what your system, the system you're running is based on your own self-sabotaging mindset and belief systems and ideas and loyalties. This system that I'm going to show you, if you just follow along for the time being, you will see that nature works. The laws work.
Yeah.
It's not about going following you.
No.
It's about saying,
I wouldn't fucking follow me.
It's not about saying do what I do in the sense that I never make a mistake. It's about saying what I'm going to show you now is the way that the system works and that the laws work. And if you follow the laws, then you're going to see that it's possible to get an outcome that's different to the outcome that you've already got or that you've always got.
But I think what's important here with the guys was that also the mindset part of it. 100%. Like I can, we hand people, I do it at the beginning of Massive Amount of Money. I go, if you want to be financially free and never have to worry about money again, just follow what's in this book. But you won't follow what's in the book. Do you know what I mean? And the reason you won't follow what's in the book is because you have a subconscious motive to stay safe, and safe for you is, I know how to fuck up money and handle it. Yes. I know how to be broke and handle it.
Well, that's why we were able to do it, because we got out of our own way. We shifted out those thoughts, that self-sabotaging thoughts that we were having. We were actually able to listen to you because we'd done that, you know, that equilibration process.
Yeah, because it really is after relationships and you that you're able to have those deeper conversations. Does that make sense? Where you're able to go, so do you get now that, you know, now that we got that out of the way, we're able to follow the system to do what needs to be done. And I mean, for us, you know, we provide for people all the coaching, everything they need. It's all part of what they buy into. And it goes, you know, and they get coached by Mills, who's, you know, one of the co-creators of the fucking thing. And so, they can't get it wrong as long as they follow the system.
So just on that, just going backtrack a bit, Lise, with your experience at relationships and you, what did you sort out? Like, what realization and what moment did you have, and why did that make a difference?
Well, my dad was a drinker, and he was emotionally abusive, but he used to be emotionally abusive to the people around me and used me as a way to make them feel bad. Right. So he would, you know, he would use me in his example on why my brother wasn't good enough. And then he'd use me in his example as why my mother wasn't a good enough mother, and she wasn't ever going to, you know, be what I will one day be.
Right.
You know, he sort of deflected onto me, but he was never directly cruel to me. It was always somebody else. And so I built up this belief in my head that, one, I wasn't good enough because I kept listening to him say it to everybody else, but also that if I did well, that it made others feel bad.
Right.
And so I needed to not do well because it might hurt someone else. It might impact somebody else and how they feel. And I had this overwhelming need to not have anyone feel bad, not have anyone not like me,
yeah,
because that's, you know, that's the relationship that Dad had created, or the story that I had, yeah, played in my head all, yeah, that time. So actually, Mick was the person that I did the, yeah, process with, that you have to, you know,
yeah,
and it was overwhelming as well, because I'd had my moment staring at Mick, and it was quite overwhelming. And I think that,
he was
your dad.
He was your surrogate.
He was my surrogate. Wow. So I was looking at him, talking to my dad, but Mick was there. And Mick will tell you that he remembers how his equilibration felt, but he can't remember any of the things said. He struggles with that memory, but he remembers mine.
Yeah.
Because it was such a beautiful moment. So I was able, I think that's the biggest thing for me.
What did you get in that moment?
I got that all he was doing was making sure that I was strong enough and tough enough, one, to withstand a relationship with Michael, because it hasn't been easy, but he's, yeah, gorgeous, and I wouldn't have it any other way. But also, he gave me my mum and my brother. Like, he drew me very close to them. He told me, because I had this awful, you know, perception of him, he told me never to become a nurse, and I became a nurse. It was like spite. It was like he was pushing me to do it. Like, I'm, yeah, going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm very good at my job. I'm, mm-hmm, very, very good. And I think it was definitely a calling that I was supposed to have.
Yeah.
So I was able to take that and realize that I actually don't have to hide from my success. I'm definitely not mediocre, and believing and telling myself all these years that I am was just stopping me from actually creating what I was supposed to create, yeah, which is what I've created now with, you know, my family and my career. So it was quite overwhelming, but I also have to reflect regularly to see that, because I can feel it, you know, come back. So like consciously, I can feel myself doing it sometimes, and I see people, I see their success, and I'm like, oh, I wish I was like them. And I think, I'm not them, I'm me, and I'm still, yeah, fantastic. Mm. I don't have to be like that person. So
yeah, I think it's so important to get that. I think so many people think or don't realize how much their experience, like their early experiences, impact how they go with money. And that would have been an underlying aspect all the way through. Even though you want to consciously get ahead, subconsciously it's not happening for you, because
no,
you're feeling like, if I get ahead, other people are going to be let down. And it's really normal that as you go through now, that you will still see that, because there are different levels to getting that. Like, the You can't undo, would you agree? You can't undo what, yeah, you got. You can never go back there, right? But yeah, you get a level of success, and we'll talk about where you're at now as well, so that, you know, people can understand where you've come to. But you get a level of success, and then you think, oh, maybe, but then, like, and you stay there, then you think, actually, there's more for me, and there's more for me. So those that process of doubting yourself, people want to get rid of that part of themselves, but that's actually a super important part, because it helps you to push forward, because it helps you to go, actually, and reminds you that there is somewhere more for you to do, there's something more for you to do, there is somewhere more for you to be. Does that make sense? And yeah, I feel like that's an important part that people don't want to recognize sometimes, that you need to have these moments where you're like, oh, and it's a reminder that you're not in the place that you were. And
no,
the level of, like, if this is where I was and this is where I am, the difference between where I want to be and where I was, there's no different. It's just a matter of, you know, moving towards that and having that plan to go towards that, you know. The level of, yeah, discomfort in this space is the same as in this space. It's just you want to be more, you're just familiar with this level of discomfort, you know, the lower level of discomfort, instead of going, oh, actually, there's the same level of discomfort here. I'm just going to be, it's just unfamiliar to me. So we don't want to step into that, but that's our reminder to go, right, this is the next place I can be, you know. So yeah, you were speaking a few weeks back at our seminar in Brisbane. You were telling everybody where you're at and where you've come to. Do you want to share a little bit about that for us?
Yeah, sure. I am doing the same job I was doing beforehand, before relationships and you. I've worked at different places, but the same level. So I'm not necessarily making more money, but certainly I'm very financially successful, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So we've got rid of all our debt. Michael continues to get pay rises, which is his, you know, fantastic. And even though he doesn't put out any, you know, CVs or anything, like every couple of times a week, he comes and says, a recruiter rang me again. They want me to do this. They can't afford me. And so he's really, you know, put forward his worth to the universe. But I am so much more successful because I'm not afraid of it. And, like, you know, I've implemented initiatives around the state that are now being put in emergency departments all over. I'm on multiple statewide advisory boards to, you know, for innovation and creation in my chosen field. I have been fought over of two, you know, emergency departments wanting me. I was Nurse of the Year last year as well, which was so fantastic because the year of the pandemic, I remember I'm quite a history buff, so I love a bit of history. And I always used to watch, you know, things about the war or, you know, the Spanish flu epidemic or the plague. And I used to think, oh, my God, could you imagine being a nurse then? And then when the pandemic hit, I was like, this is our chance, you know, this is like our Olympics. This is what we train for. And then to get Nurse of the Year just purely because of, you know, the giant push that, you know, myself and my colleagues made to get us ready for something, which fortunately didn't end up coming to us, thank goodness, was quite humbling. Yeah. And I thought of my grandma immediately, gave me goosies all over.
So was your grandmother a nurse?
My grandma was the matriarch of family, yes. She was the first one. She nursed in London. She didn't nurse during the war. She was, you know, younger during the war, but she was one of, you know, that show Call the Midwife? Have you seen that one?
Yep.
Yeah, she was one of those on the bike. With the, I've got her little belt that she used to wear. So, yeah, she was the first one. All the women except my mum are nurses in my family.
Wow.
What else happened? Lots of things have happened, but financially, Mick and I are debt-free. Mm-hmm. We have our beautiful, brand new, beautiful home here, and we have one in Townsville that Mick's sister lives in. We are currently trying to decide what new car to buy, which is such a difficult decision when he wants.
Do I get the Lamborghini? Do I get the Ferrari?
It's very nice to be in a position where we don't have worry about how much the car costs. We can just buy the one we want. So
you should tell Mick to ring me and I'll show him how to get the car he wants out of the boss.
Yes, I will. Well, you'll have to watch this space.
That's
because
good.
We're actually having a meeting with Mike to set up an exciting new business venture.
That's cool.
So he's finally realized what his mission in life is and how he's going to make sure that he's living in line with his values more and more every day.
Because he was talking to me about his mission in pole dancing for years.
Could you imagine?
Yeah, I know. One of the things you brought up earlier was the whole thing of wanting to be liked, you know?
Yes.
People wanting to be liked by other people. And you know, it's one of the things, it comes up all the time when I'm dealing with people and I'm dealing with clients, that one of the big things is that they don't want to be disliked by someone. And I think everybody goes through it. You know, I know from my own father, it was a fucking huge challenge for him. And my dad's just downright a lovely fella. And I know for me, for years, it's taken a lot of understanding who I am to be able to manage that and understand what's happening, because people really use it as a threat because everybody suffers from it and everybody knows the pain of it. I'm not going to like you and I'm going to say this about you if you blah, 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 blah. Does that make sense? And how did you overcome that? How did you, you know, do you think it was the fact that you had no other option and it was like, listen, I'm fucking that far south, I don't give a fuck what anybody else says. I'm just going to do what needs to be done. And if they don't like me, fuck off. You know what I mean?
I honestly think it was just being more and more comfortable with the person I am, and, yeah. and exactly thinking, I used to say, oh, I don't care what they think, but it used to physically cripple me if people were mad at me. It was awful. Whereas now it doesn't take me, I don't occupy my mind with that low end bullshit anymore. Yeah. Like yeah. I just am very, very comfortable with the skin I'm in and I'm, be 40 next year, and I'm not even a little bit going to have a breakdown about that. Yeah.
I'm 40 next year.
I don't have time. I don't have time to worry about what other people think of me because the people that care about me are behind me, egging me on. So yeah. I don't give a shit anymore.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's really cool. I mean, that's a good message for anybody out there. And you know, I think one of the things I learned was when somebody doesn't like me and they're you know, they're swimming around in that place, you want to dive in and not like them either and stuff. And it's just about understanding that that's just where they're at and that's their potential growth point and that's their potential. So you're obviously showing them something about themselves that they're destined to understand and they're destined to love about themselves. So it's about holding that space and not jumping into that pool with them. You know, it's about being able to go, look, that's okay, I don't need you to like me, you know, I don't, that's not what I need. What I would love to see happen is that you love yourself enough to love whatever you dislike in me, in you, you know. And I think that's a big growth opportunity for anybody who's not feeling, who's listening to this going, fuck, you know, if I feel as if I get ahead, or I feel as if I pick up the reins in my life, or I feel as if I start to get my money organized, that I'm going to leave people behind, I'm going to disappoint someone, I'm going to make people around me not feel enough, and I don't want to do that. So I'm being loyal to their poverty mentality or loyal to their position in life. And the only person you got to be loyal to is really yourself.
Yeah, 100%.
You know what I mean? And I think it's important to say that, you know, when a person was in the position that you were in, which was they couldn't fall any further south, you know, when you let, that's life going, I'm going to keep taking things off you until you get that you're here to do something. And I've provided the whole map, all the systems, everything you need to get there, and you're here to fucking do something. And so I think that life has that play on us. And when we think about that, life's willing to be disliked in order for us to be able to pick up the reins of where we want to go and do what it is we're actually here to do, you know. And that's what the pressure of life is. Life is not fucking cruel. It doesn't beat us up. It's not that small-minded. It's actually designed for you to actually fulfill your dreams and go and get what you want and achieve the things, you know.
I think it also helps that I am very much like my father. And so because I spent all that time, all those years having this, you know, altered perception or lopsided perception of who he was and what he did to me. I've learnt to love the parts that are like him.
Yeah.
Because even though it's difficult to explain to someone, even though I don't necessarily forgive him for things, I am grateful for what he has given me.
Yeah.
And I'm actually grateful for, you know, some of the things that I didn't want to own. I didn't want to believe that I was anything like him, and I am like him.
Yeah.
And the things that I didn't want to own are part of my success. You know, the fact that I've owned them and I use them to my advantage now has made a big difference.
Well,
and
we say to people all the time, you have shadow and light sides, you know, and they're values to you. You have shadow values, you know, parts that you hide, but you need them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think also one of the things we really try to ram home in letting it go is forgiveness plays into the illusion that they fucked up. But when you're truthful and you stop and count the blessings, you're grateful. You know, your heart opens and you realize there's nothing to forgive here. Every single step and every single position they took was about me opening my heart and realizing who I am and why I'm here, you know. And I love when people get that and they're like, fuck. So I should never tell my kids to say sorry. No, never tell your children to say sorry.
Right.
Teach your children what was going on and show them how to manage their emotions and regulate and understand who they are based on what you perceive as the mistake.
Yeah, because forgiveness plays into the illusion that something was wrong and nothing was wrong when you see the balance. Just before we finish up, Lisa, in terms of being a parent and in terms of your kids, what do you feel has shifted over these last 5 years?
It's funny, because Mick and I have very different parenting styles. I don't know if you could have picked that. And the things that we used to fight about pre the last 5 years is money, which we've literally never fight about, which is great. And how we bring the kids up. Right. And now it's not a fight now, because we use the lingo with each other. And so as soon as we fire into, you can't do that, or whatever it is, then one of us will fight back with, just very balanced. You're going to regret that. This is just you. They're just reflecting what's happening for you, back on you. And that the other person has nothing to argue with, because we know that all they're doing is reflecting all the things back on us that we've not learned to love in ourselves. Yeah. So it has 100% changed both of us as parents. The kids, we are trying very hard to teach the kids that in order to be good parents for them, we need to make sure that we are good to ourselves, because we were very much, it's all about the kids and don't worry about us, and we've got to be here for the kids. Mm. And, we often will take time out just for the two of us, or, Meg will have them and I'll go, and the kids will say, that our older two will say, well, why can't we go? It's like, because sometimes it just needs to be us, and we need to take care of ourselves, because we want to teach you that when you get to our age, that you're going to take care of yourself as well. This is about self-love. So it definitely has changed us as parents. The kids are thriving, which is really good. Oh, so,
I love that.
Yeah, they go to Montessori schools, and Nate has gone from completely failing and stepping back and disengaging from school to he's in full force. And the last parent teacher interview, you've always got one that's, really thriving, and parent teacher interviews are always glowing, and one you think, oh, do I really have to go to this one? And they did a complete flip last time. So Nate's like the star pupil, which was really nice.
I remember that whole dilemma of getting him into Montessori and all that stuff as well, being able to afford that. Now it's just part of what you do, I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. And it's really good. It's so important to teach kids. I think the biggest lesson a parent can teach their kid is to put themselves first. And the only way they do that is because, they have to lead by example. You can't tell a kid that. You've got to show them that. And that's what you guys are doing, which I love.
I also think as well there, in terms of, the concept of getting your kids into school, and then, now it's like, where beforehand I was like, oh, how are we going to do it? And once you do it, life adapts to you. And so life says, you've got to follow what it is you want to do, and I will adapt for you. And the beauty is that concept becomes the norm. Mm. Do you know what I mean? It's like, what do we want to do? Life will adapt. What do we want to do? Life will adapt. Where the opposite to that is, I can't do what I want to do because life is not providing what I need. Do you know what I mean? When in actual fact, we cause a reality. We cause the things that we want to have in our lives. And once we start to have the first experience of that, we're like, fuck, wow, everything fell into place. And then that just becomes the norm. You don't question it anymore. You're like, no, I'm going to do this. Like, don't worry, life will adapt. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Can I just share a little story, random? Mm-hmm. But you know how you always say to the kids, Mitch, you say, who's number one? And they go, me.
Yeah.
Well, Lola calls me last night. She FaceTimes me at the most random times. I'm cooking dinner and stuff. She's got a brand new sewing machine because she's really good and really creative with that. She doesn't know how to use it yet. So I told her I'd go around and show her. And she goes, can you come now? And I went, no, I'm in the middle of freaking cooking. I have a life. She goes, Millie, who's the most important person in your life? Me. So she's trying to use it against me. She's a little cheeky bugger, isn't she? But, yeah, it's so important to teach our kids that. And, Lisa, I love talking to you. I love that you share your story. I love the transformation, and that is down to you and Mick doing the work. It's never going to be a smooth sailing ride. It's not meant to be a smooth sailing ride. Life is meant to have its ups and downs. It's meant to have its ebbs and flows. But when we know how to handle it, and when we take life by the horns instead of waiting for life to happen to us, then everything is possible and everything can move and shift and grow. And I really appreciate you and Mick for all your love and support. And I love you. Thanks so much for sharing with us today.
Oh, thank you, guys. We love you.
Listen, again, we really appreciate the time. And also, I didn't realise it had been that long since we met, but well done, guys. You've really, really kicked ass, and that's great. It's great to be able – you're a great testament as to what can happen when you just go for it and don't care.
And I'll see you guys in a
few weeks, because you're doing the training with us. Woohoo.
Yeah.
Next level, baby.
You're going to love it. All right,
awesome.
Pal.
Awesome. Lots of love, Lisa. Big kisses and hugs to Mitch too.
God bless.
Mick.
Will do.
Mick.
Mitch.
Not Mitch.
Big hugs and kisses to Mitch. God.
Delete.
See you guys.
See ya.
Love you.
Bye.
If you found this information inspiring, make sure you subscribe and tune in to the next Dorothy and the Dealer podcast.